He still doesn't say anything. I slam my book shut and turn my body toward his. The fact that our knees are pressed together doesn't go unnoticed. He glances down at our legs, and I can see a hint of a grin playing at the corners of his mouth.
"Well," he says, "I sort of liked sitting by you the other day, so I thought I'd do it again. I take it that's not what you want, so..."
He begins to gather his books, and a huge part of me wants to rip them from his hands and make him stay here, right where he is. But an even bigger part of me is relieved that he's taking the hint. He shoves his notebook in his backpack, and I keep quiet. If I say anything, I know it'll be nothing but a pathetic plea for him to stay put.
"You're in my seat,"
a flat, monotone voice says. Carter and I both look up to see a guy standing in front of us, staring down at Carter with an indifferent expression.
"I was just moving, man,"
Carter says, pulling his backpack onto the table.
"You should have never sat there in the first place," the guy says. "I sit there."
The guy turns to me and extends his arms straight out, pointing at me.
"And you don't sit right there. A different girl sat there on Monday, so you can't sit there."
The guy's expression is troubled. He's terribly disturbed that we're in different seats today. I feel sorry for him, recognizing features of one of my brothers when I look at him. I start to tell him we'll move, that he can have his seat, but Carter's anger intercepts my response. He stands up.
"Get your finger out of her face," he says to the guy. "Get out of my seat,"
the guy replies, turning his attention back to Carter. Carter laughs and drops his backpack on the floor.
"Dude," he says, "what is this, kindergarten? Go find your own fucking seat."
The guy drops his arm and looks at Carter in shock. He starts to reply, but snaps his mouth shut and walks toward the back row, defeated.
"But that's my seat,"
he mumbles, walking away. Carter pulls his notebook back out of his backpack and sets it on the table in front of him.
"I guess you're stuck with me," he says. "No way I'm moving seats now."
I shake my head and lean in toward him. "Carter," I whisper, "give him a break. I think he's on the autism spectrum. He can't help it." Carter snaps his head in my direction.
"No shit. Are you serious?"
I nod. "My brother had autism. I know the signs." He runs his hands over his face.
"Shit,"
he groans. He quickly stands up, reaching for my hand when he does. I stand up with him.
"Get your stuff,"
he says, pointing to my backpack and notebook. He turns around and throws his stuff on the table behind him, then reaches for my backpack and does the same. He looks up at the guy and points down to the seats we were just occupying.
"Sorry, man. I didn't realize they were your seats. We'll move."
The guy quickly walks back to the row we are in and claims his seat before Carter changes his mind. Realizing most of the class is probably watching the commotion between the three of us, I still can't help but smile. I love that he just did that. We both walk back to the seats we occupied on Monday, then unpack our stuff on the table. Again. "Thank you for doing that," I say to him. He doesn't respond. He gives me a half smile, then looks down at his phone until class starts. Things are a little awkward once the lecture begins. Not wanting to sit by Carter has left him questioning me. I can tell, because it's written clearly in front of me in black ink as I stare down at the paper he just scooted toward me. "Why didn't you want to sit by me?" I chuckle at the simplicity in his question. I pick up my pen and write a response. "Dude, what is this? Kindergarten?" He reads my response, and I swear I can see him frown. I was trying to be funny, but he missed the humor, apparently. He writes something down, something long, and slides the note back to me. "I'm serious, Sloan. Did I cross some sort of line yesterday? I'm sorry if I did. I know you're with Asa, and I respect that. I honestly just think you're fun and want to sit by you. Spanish bores the hell out of me, and sitting next to you makes the urge I have to gouge my own eyes out a little less imminent." I stare at his note for a lot longer than it actually takes me to read it. He's got incredibly impressive handwriting for a guy, and an even more impressive way of making my heart race.
He thinks I'm fun. It's a simple compliment, but one that affects me way more than I wish it did. I have no idea what to say in response, so I press my pen to the paper and don't even think when I write. People in Wyoming don't really exist, and I can never find the right outfit to wear when I shop for penguins. I slide the paper back to him, and when he laughs out loud, I put my hand over my mouth, covering my smile. I love that he gets my sense of humor, but hate it at the same time. Every second I spend with him just makes two more seconds I want to spend with him. He slides the paper back to me. Mosquitoes whisper sweet nothings into my barrel of monkeys that took too long to bring me the pizza I ordered. I laugh, then clench my stomach. Seeing the word pizza reminds me of just how hungry I am. I was too upset to eat dinner last night, so it's been over 24 hours since I've eaten anything. Pizza sounds good. I lay my pen down, but don't slide the note to him. I'm not sure why I wrote something down that I was actually thinking this time.
It does, he says aloud.
I glance up at him, and he's looking at me with a smile that actually hurts. He's everything I want, and everything I don't need, and it literally, physically hurts.
After class, he whispers, I'm taking you for pizza.
It comes out of his mouth so fast, it seems like he knows he shouldn't be saying it, much less doing it. But I nod. Damn it, I nod.
7. Carter. After class is over, she walks next to me as I lead her toward the parking lot. I can tell by the grip she has on her backpack and the way she keeps looking behind her that she's about to back out. When she pauses, turning toward me on the pavement, I don't even give her the chance to speak. It's lunchtime, Sloane. You need to eat. I'm taking you for pizza. Quit trying to make it more than it is, okay? Her eyes widen in shock that I knew exactly what she was thinking. She presses her lips together and nods. It's lunch, she says with a shrug, casually trying to convince herself that this is perfectly okay. I eat lunch, you eat lunch. What's the big deal if we eat lunch at the same time, at the same restaurant? Exactly, I say. There are smiles on both of our faces, but the fear in our eyes speaks volumes. We're crossing a line, and we both know it. When we reach my car, I naturally start toward her door to open it for her, but change my mind and go straight to the driver's side instead. The less I treat her like my date, the less it'll feel like a date. I don't want to make her more nervous about our casual lunch than she already is. The truth is, I'm nervous enough for the both of us. I don't know what the hell I think I'm doing, but whenever I'm around her, all I can think about is how much more I want to be around her. We both shut our doors, and I crank the car, then pull out of the parking lot. Pulling away from the college with her alone in my car feels almost like playing a game of Russian roulette. My pulse is racing and my mouth runs dry, knowing my being with her is potential career suicide, not to mention what would happen if Asa found out. I wipe him from my mind and look over at her, deciding that if this may very well be my last day on Earth, I'm going to focus on her and enjoy the hell out of it. I have a confession, she says, looking at me, embarrassed. What is it? She clicks her seatbelt into place and folds her hands in her lap. I don't have any money. I want to laugh at her confession, but in all honesty, it makes me sad for her. My treat, I say, because it would have been regardless. But if I hadn't taken you to lunch today, how would you have eaten? She shrugs. I usually don't eat lunch. Lunch costs money, and money is something I don't have in abundance right now. I'm saving up for something more important. She glances out the window, a clear sign that she doesn't have intentions of elaborating on what it is she's saving up for. I don't push it, but I do push for an answer as to why she doesn't have money to eat on. Why don't you just ask Asa for money? He's got it. I bet if he knew you weren't eating lunch, he'd make sure you had some. She shakes her head. I don't want his dirty money, she spits out. I'd rather starve. I don't respond. I don't want to remind her of the fact that she's under the impression that I'm working for Asa, so I'll be paying for our lunch with that same dirty money. Instead, I change the conversation to a lighter subject. Tell me about your brother, I say as I steer the car in the direction of the freeway. My brother, she asks, questioning me. Which one? I had two. The one with autism? I don't know a lot about it. I had a neighbor kid back in Sacramento who had it. I didn't know it was something you could overcome, but you said your brother had it, like as in past tense. Her eyes drop to her lap and she laces her fingers together. It's not something you can overcome, she says quietly. But she referred to it in the past tense, or I guess she referred to him in the past tense. I'm an insensitive dumbass. Why the hell did I bring it up? I'm sorry. I reach over and give her hand a quick squeeze. I'm really sorry, I repeat. She pulls her hand back to her lap and clears her throat. It's fine, she says, forcing a smile. It was a long time ago. Autism wasn't the only thing he dealt with, unfortunately. And on that note, we reach the restaurant. I pull into a parking spot and turn off the car. Neither of us moves. I think she's waiting on me to get out of the car, but I feel like I just ruined her good mood. I officially sucked the fun out of that drive, I say. Got any remedies? She laughs lightheartedly and grins. We could take the writing game to another level, she says. Try to lighten the mood a little bit. Instead of writing random things without thinking, we could just spend lunch saying random things without thinking. I nod and gesture toward the restaurant in front of us. After you, I say. Walrus tusks cloud my vision like chocolate pudding. She laughs and opens her door. One-legged tiger sharks are better for you than vegetables.
8. Asa.
John!
I'm gripping my phone so tight, I wouldn't be surprised if it crumpled in my hand. I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth, calming myself, attempting to give her the benefit of the doubt before I completely flip out.
John!
I finally hear his footsteps bounding up the stairs. My door swings open, and he walks into the room.
What the hell is it? I was taking a shit.
I look down at the GPS report on my phone.
What's at 1262 Ricker Road?
He looks up at the ceiling, drumming his fingers against the doorframe.
Ricker Road, he repeats to himself. Mostly just restaurants, I think.
He looks down at his phone and types in the address.
Why? We got a delivery?
I shake my head.
Nope.
Sloan's on Ricker Road. John cocks his head.
Did your car break down? She need a ride somewhere?
I roll my eyes.
She doesn't need a fucking ride, dumbass. She's on Ricker Road when she should be on campus. I want to know what the fuck she's doing there and who the fuck she's with.
Realization finally dawns on his face.
Oh, shit. You want to go check it out?
He scrolls through his phone some more.
Looks like Italian. Something called Mi Amore.
I toss my phone across the mattress and stand up, pacing the room.
No,
I say.
It's lunchtime.
It would take too long to get there with traffic. She'd be gone before we even got there. I take a deep breath and grip the bridge of my nose between my fingertips, willing myself to remain calm.
If she's fucking around, I'll find out. And if I find out, she's fucking dead.
The bastard she's fucking around with won't be as lucky.
I'll figure it out, I say to John. Tonight.
9. Sloan. Carter holds the door open for me. It's the first time I've been inside a restaurant in months. I forgot how good they smell. Thoughts of Asa finding out I'm here keep flashing through my mind, despite doing my best to focus on the fact that I'm just eating lunch. As innocent as I can pretend this is, if Asa found out, I don't even want to think about what Asa would do. The hostess smiles at us, grabbing two menus. Table for two?
Yes, please, Carter says. Bananas like boiled water in Reno,
he adds with a straight face. I burst out laughing. The hostess shoots us both a confused look, then shakes her head. Follow me. Carter reaches down and grabs my hand, pulling me forward. He doesn't just grab my hand to lead me to our seat. He intertwines his fingers with mine and smiles at me,
causing my heart to pound like a kick drum. Oh, God, this is wrong. Wrong, wrong. When we reach our table and he pulls his hand from mine to take his seat, it literally makes my heart ache having to let go of his hand. We both scoot into the booth and rest our elbows on the table between us. I look down at his hands, at the one that just held mine. It's odd how the slightest touch from that simple hand can cause such a disturbance inside of me. What the hell is so special about his hand? What? He says. The sound of his voice pulls me out of my trance and I look up at him. His head is tilted to the side and his eyes are focused on mine, hard, like he's attempting to read my mind. What? I ask him in return, feigning ignorance. He leans back into the booth and folds his arms across his chest. I was just wondering what you were thinking. You were looking at my hands like you wanted to cut them off. I didn't realize my expression was a dead giveaway. I can feel the heat rise to my cheeks, but I refuse to look embarrassed. I lean back in my booth and scoot toward the wall so that I'm not sitting directly in front of him. I prop my feet in the seat next to him and cross my ankles, getting comfortable. I was just thinking, I reply. He props his feet up next to me, crossing them at the ankles as well. I can't tell if he's just getting comfortable or if he's mimicking me. I know you were just thinking. I want to know what you were thinking. Are you always this nosy? He smiles. When it comes to the safety of my limbs, yes. Well, I wasn't thinking I wanted to cut off your hands, if that makes you feel better. He keeps his eyes locked on mine, his head resting casually against the booth. Tell me, he says. You're pushy, I say, picking up the menu. I hold it up in front of me, blocking the sight of him. His piercing dark eyes are hard to say no to, so I just choose not to look at him at all. His fingers slide over the top of the menu and he pulls it down, eyeing me, still waiting for an answer. I drop the menu and sigh. Internal thoughts are internal for a reason, Carter. He narrows his eyes and leans forward in the booth. Should I not have held your hand? Did that piss you off? The sensually smooth sound of his voice alone tickles the inside of my stomach like a feather, but I try to convince myself that I'm just hungry. It didn't piss me off, I say, still skirting around his demand for answers. The problem I had with him holding my hand was that I liked it. A lot. But I'm not telling him that. I pull my gaze from his and pick the menu up again. I don't want to see his reaction. I read the selections on the menu for a while, very aware of the silence poised between us. The fact that he isn't saying anything is driving me crazy. I can feel him staring, silently challenging me to look at him. Can I get a pizza? I ask, breaking the silence and changing the subject. Get whatever you want, he says, finally picking up his own menu. Pepperoni and onions. I drop my menu back on the table. And water's fine. I'm going to the restroom. I move to slide out, but his feet are still propped up in the booth next to me, blocking my exit. I'm forced to look up at him, but he's still staring down at his menu. He slowly pulls one foot off the booth, then the other, a small smile playing on his lips the whole time. I scoot out of the booth and head to the bathroom, locking the door behind me. I press my back to the door and close my eyes, letting out a deep, pent-up sigh. Damn him. Damn him for sitting by me in class. Damn him for showing up at my house. Damn him for being involved with Asa. Damn him for bringing me here. Damn him for holding my hand. Damn him for being so nice. Damn him for being everything I wish Asa was and everything I wish I could have. I wash my hands no less than 3 times, but I can still feel him. I can still feel his fingers laced with mine, the rough skin of his palm pressed against my hand, the way he pulled me behind him, guiding me through the restaurant, the tingle on my palm that won't go away no matter how hard I scrub. I squirt more soap into my hands and wash them for the 4th time, then work up the nerve to finally exit the bathroom and take a seat back in the booth. I figured you'd want some caffeine, Carter says, pointing to the soda in front of me. He figured right. Damn him. I slide the drink closer to me and place the straw between my lips. Thanks. He props his feet up on my side of the booth, blocking me in again.
You're welcome,
he says, shooting me a smile that's on the verge of seductive and even a little bit cocky. I catch myself staring at his lips for a beat too long, and his smile widens. Don't smile at me like that, I snap, annoyed that he's making this harder on both of us with his subtle flirtations. I force my back against the booth and kick my legs onto the seat next to him. The smile disappears from his face when he drops his gaze down to my arms. Anger returns to his eyes when he notices the fading bruises plastered on me like I've been branded. That's how they make me feel, anyway. I run my hands up my arms to cover them, suddenly feeling exposed.
You don't want me to smile at you?
He asks, a confused expression strewn across his face. No, I say. I don't. I don't want you to smile at me like you like me. I don't want you to sit next to me in class. I don't want you to hold my hand. I don't want you to flirt with me. I don't even want you to buy me lunch, but I'm too hungry to really care about that one right now. I bring my drink to my mouth to shut myself up. I hate that I'm being so mean to him right now, but the longer I'm putting us both at risk by being here with him, the angrier I grow at my own stupidity. Carter looks down at his glass and runs his hands up it, wiping off the condensation.
You want me to be mean to you then?
He looks at me with an expression so cold, I don't even recognize him.
You want me to treat you like shit, the way Asa treats you?
He leans back in the booth, folding his arms over his broad chest.
I didn't peg you as a doormat when we first met.
I return his heated stare with just as much fury. I didn't peg you as a dealer, I snap back. We hold each other's gazes, refusing to be the one who cracks first. It's him. A smug smile spreads across his face.
I guess I do have that going for me. Dealer? Check. Asshole? Check. Want me to treat you like shit? Seems to work wonders for Asa.
His cruel words are like a direct punch to my gut, knocking the breath out of me. Fuck you, I say through clenched teeth.
No, thanks. Apparently I'd have to hurt you first, and that's not my style.
I successfully fight back tears after that dig. I've spent my whole life teaching myself how to not cry in front of assholes. I've got this. Take me back to my car, I say. Carter's eyes suddenly fill with apology. He runs his hand down his face, groaning in frustration. Or regret.
I'll take you after you eat something.
I scoot over in the booth until my thigh meets his feet. I'm not hungry. Let me out. He doesn't move his feet, so instead I pull my legs up and stand in the booth, then jump over him. I head for the door, never having wanted to get away from someone so quickly in my entire life.
Sloan, he calls after me. Sloan!
I swing the door open and walk outside, a rush of wind colliding with my face as I gasp for air. I bend over and put my hands on my knees, inhaling through my nose and out my mouth over and over. When the threat of tears subsides, I straighten up and walk toward his car. The alarm beeps twice and the doors unlock. I turn around, but he isn't following me. He's still inside the restaurant. Damn him. He just unlocked the car for me. I slam the door as hard as I can after I climb inside. I wait for him to walk outside, but he doesn't. Several moments pass and I realize he has no intention of following me. He's actually going to eat first. He's an even bigger jerk than I thought. I grab the baseball cap off the console and put it on my head, pulling it down over my eyes to block the sun. If I have to wait for him to eat lunch before he takes me back to Ace's car, I might as well get a nap out of it.
10. Carter. Can we get these to go? I ask, handing our drinks to the waitress. And the pizza? I'll have it right out, she says. She walks away and I lean forward, dropping my head in my hands. I have no idea what just got into me. I've never let a girl get to me like this, much less a girl I'm not even dating. But damn her, it's so frustrating. I don't understand how she can be so headstrong and confident when she's around me, but at her own home, she acts like a completely different person. Then, out of the blue, she accosts me for being nice to her? What the hell? I realize some women are drawn to men like Asa. I've been in this career long enough to see that. I try to empathize and understand it, but I can't fathom why Sloane remains in the situation she's in. It's so damn painful having to sit back and watch it, because I don't know what's kept her there. Even if it's not my place, I can't be alone with her like this and not use it as an opportunity to convince her she's better than this. Although I'm pretty sure calling her a doormat and saying the shit I said isn't how to convince her of that. I'm a fucking idiot. Your order is at the counter, the waitress says, handing me the bill. I grab it from her and pay, then head outside with Sloane's food. When I approach the car, I pause before opening the door. She's sitting in the passenger seat with her feet propped up on the dash. She's got my ball cap on, tugged down over her eyes. Her dark hair is swept over her right shoulder, spilling down over her arms, which are folded across her chest. Seeing her in her red dress the other night messed with my mind so bad I didn't sleep all night. But seeing her here, asleep in my car, wearing my ball cap, I don't think I'll ever be able to sleep again. I open the door and she pulls her feet off the dash, but doesn't pull the ball cap from over her eyes. She shifts her body more toward the passenger door, a move that causes me to wince. I hurt her. She's so damaged, and I hurt her even more. Here, I say, holding the to-go cup out to her. She lifts the brim of the cap and looks up at me. I'm surprised to see that her eyes aren't red. I assumed the hat was to cover up the fact that she was crying, but she hasn't shed a single tear. She takes the drink from my hands, so I hold the pizza box out to her. She takes it and I slide into the driver's seat. She immediately opens the lid to the pizza and grabs the slice, shoving it into her mouth. She turns the box so that the pizza is facing me, then lifts it to offer me a slice. I take one and start to smile at her, but remember she ordered me not to. Instead, I take a bite of the pizza and start the car. We don't speak on the way back to campus. She's finishing up her third slice when we pull into the parking spot next to her car. She takes a big swig of her soda, then closes the lid to the pizza and places the box in the back seat. Take the pizza with you, I say, my words ripping a hole through the silence and tension built up between us. She places her drink in the cup holder and pulls off my baseball cap, smoothing back her hair. I can't, she says quietly. He'll wonder where I got it. She shifts her body toward me and reaches between us into the back seat to grab her backpack. She faces forward again and tucks her backpack underneath her arms. I would thank you for lunch, but it pretty much ruined my day, she says. She opens the car door and rushes out before I can process her words. When her door slams behind her, I kill the engine and get out of the car. Sloane! I rush around my car until I reach her. She throws her backpack inside and shuts her back door. She opens the driver's side door and uses it as a barrier between us. Don't, Carter, she says, refusing to look up at me. You made your point, but I'm too pissed to listen to apologies right now. She can tell me not to apologize all she wants, but there's no way in hell I'm letting her get in that car before I say my piece. I'm sorry, I say anyway. I shouldn't have said those things. You didn't deserve that, but I shake my head. You're better than this, Sloane. Give yourself some credit and get the hell away from him. She refuses to look at me when I speak, so I run my hand under her chin and tilt her face up. She darts her eyes to the right, still stubbornly refusing to make eye contact. I squeeze between her door and my car and make my way around until she's directly in front of me. I take her face in both hands, desperate for her to look at me. I need her to listen to what I have to say. Look at me. I plead, keeping a gentle hold on her face until she finally makes eye contact. I'm sorry. I was out of line. She continues to keep her eyes locked on mine while a lone, thick tear trickles down her cheek. She wipes it away with the back of her hand before I have a chance to. You have no idea how many times I've heard that same uniform apology, she whispers. It's not the same, Sloane. You can't compare me to him. She tilts her eyes up to the sky and laughs, trying to hold back more tears. You're no better than he is. The only difference between the two of you is that nothing Asa has ever said to me has hurt as much as everything you've said today. She pulls my hands away from her face and climbs into her car. She reaches for the door handle and looks back up at me. You're no different, Carter. Go save someone else. She pulls the door shut and I'm forced to take a step back. I watch as she completely breaks down inside the car. She doesn't look at me again, but I can see the tears spilling down her cheeks as she pulls away. "I'm sorry," I say again as I watch her drive away.
11. Asa. After everything I've done for her, after everything I'm doing for her, she better have one hell of a good excuse for putting me through this. She'd be nothing if it weren't for me. I took her in when she had nowhere else to go. If it weren't for me, she would have had to crawl back to her crack whore mother. Just based on the things she's told me about her childhood, she's way better off with me, and she knows it. A mother who brings home a new sleazy husband every other month? I'd like to see her go back to that shit. But if she's fucking around, that's the first place I'll drop her off. I'll be the first one to shove her right through her crack whore mother's front door. Back into a trailer full of rotating stepfathers who get off on hiding in her closet while she changes clothes.
"Do you want me to try something else?"
Jess says, pulling my focus back into the moment. She's on her knees at the edge of the bed.
"It's not getting hard."
I lift up on my elbows and look down at her.
"If you knew how to fucking do it right," I say.
I stand up and scoot her a few inches across the floor and brace my hands against the wall. I close my eyes and imagine she's Sloane kneeling in front of me instead. Except I imagine she's crying, begging me to keep her, pleading for me to save her again, just like I had to do the last time she did something this stupid. Who in their right mind would take Sloane to a restaurant knowing she belongs to me, to Asa Jackson? Whoever he is, if he knew the things I could do to him, he never would have done it. No one has that kind of death wish.
"Fuck,"
I say, irritated at the way the rubber gets in the way of feeling her tongue. I pull out of her mouth and rip the condom off, and then let her finish while I pretend she's Sloane. When I go downstairs, John is seated at the bar with Dalton and Carter. I grab a beer out of the fridge and take a seat with them.
"You didn't tell me she could deep throat," I say to John, twisting the top off the beer.
"Lucky bastard." John glares at me, leaning back in his chair.
"I didn't know she could."
I laugh. "Well, I don't think she knew she could either, until about 5 minutes ago." John sighs and shakes his head.
"God damn it, Asa. I told you to go easy on her."
I laugh and take a sip, then set the beer back on the table. The only girl I go easy on is Sloane. Carter lifts his beer to his lips, eyeing me while he tilts his head back and gulps. This kid has a major staring problem.
"Speaking of Sloane," John says, pulling my attention back to his, "when will you return the favor?"
He laughs and takes a swig of beer.
The jackass is laughing? He thinks he made a fucking joke?
I pull my leg back and kick his chair as hard as I can, sending him and his beer backward onto the ceramic tile. I stand up and look down at him, my hands clenched in fists.
"Sloane's not a fucking whore," I yell.
John pulls himself up off the floor, then proceeds to bow up to me like the idiot that he is.
"She's not. Guess you found out why she was on Ricker today? She wasn't off fucking some guy like you thought?"
I lunge forward and punch him in his goddamn filthy mouth. He falls to the floor, and I kick him in the ribs. I drop to my knees and try to punch him again, but Dalton and Carter are pulling me off of him before I have the chance. He scoots away from me and wipes at his bloody mouth. He looks down at his hand and back up at me.
"Fucking bastard," he says.
"Funny. That's the same thing your girlfriend called me when I pulled my dick out of her throat." John scrambles to his feet and lunges forward again, so I step into his swing, allowing him to square me in the jaw. Carter steps between us, pushing him back against the fridge while Dalton tightens his grip on my arms.
"Go upstairs," Carter says to him. "Go check on Jess and calm the fuck down."
John nods, and Carter releases him. Dalton doesn't let go of me until John clears the stairs. I push my hand against my jaw and pop my neck. "I'll be out back. Let me know as soon as Sloan gets here."
12. Carter. Asa walks out the back door and I grip the back of my neck and squeeze. "Shit. I know," Dalton says, not having any clue as to what's actually going through my mind at the moment. "I need to make a phone call," I tell him. "Wait in here and make sure they don't get into it again." I walk out the front door and head straight to my car. I pull my phone from my pocket and scroll through the numbers, checking for Sloan's. Dalton said he entered everyone's number who lives here into my phone once I was assigned this job. I scroll through the S's but don't see her name. Just as I'm about to throw my phone out of frustration, the contact Asa's girl catches my eye. I press it. I press it over and over, willing it to dial faster. I hold the phone to my ear and listen as it rings. On the fourth ring, she finally picks up. "Hello? Sloan," I say her name desperately. "Who is this? It's Lou. Carter. It's Carter." She sighs heavily into the phone. "No, don't hang up," I say, hoping she holds on long enough to hear I'm not just calling her to apologize again. "He knows. He knows you went to lunch today on Ricker Road." She doesn't say anything for several quiet seconds. "You told him?" she asks, her voice full of hurt. "No. No, I would never. I heard John say something about finding out who you were with at lunch. He doesn't know it was me." I glance behind me, making sure I'm still in the clear. Dalton is standing at the window, watching me. "But how could he know?" she asks, fear in her voice. "Maybe he tracks your phone," I say. "Where are you?" "I just left the gym. I'm 5 minutes away. Carter, what do I do? He'll kill me." The fear in her voice makes me regret every second of today. I should have never put her in this situation. "Listen to me. The box of pizza is still in my back seat. I'll keep him occupied out back. When you get here, grab the pizza and bring it to the backyard. Act like you have nothing to hide. Tell him you were hungry, so you went out to a restaurant for lunch and bought a pizza and then offer us some. If you bring it up first, you should be fine."
"Okay," she says, breathing heavily. "Okay."
"Okay," I say back. Several silent seconds pass and my pulse slowly begins to regulate. "Sloan."
"Yeah?"
she whispers. "I won't let him hurt you." She's quiet for a moment. I hear her sigh, then the call is dropped. I look down at my phone and take a deep breath, then head inside. "Who is that?" Dalton asks, eyeing me curiously when I walk back through the door. "Hottie from Spanish?" I nod. "Yep, I'm going back out. You want to help me calm Asa down?" Dalton falls into step behind me. "Looks like you're the one who needs calming down," he says. I swing open the door and Asa is seated on a lounge chair by the pool, drumming his fingers on his knees. I take a seat next to him and kick my feet back, attempting to appear as relaxed as my nerves will allow me. I don't care if he finds out it was me who was with her at lunch. I don't care if he follows through with his threat. All I care about is that he doesn't lay another finger on Sloan. Dalton and I keep Asa occupied with talk about an upcoming deal he wants to make. A while later, we hear Sloan pull into the driveway. I can see Asa tense up and he clamps his mouth shut mid-sentence. He starts to pull himself up, I assume to go meet her in the front yard. I do whatever it takes to distract him. "So, this Jess chick," I say. He turns toward me. "What about her?" "Just curious. Can she really deep throat?" Even just having to pretend I'm interested makes me feel like an asshole. Asa smiles and opens his mouth to respond when the back door swings open. Sloan walks outside with a pizza box in her hand. I can feel the anger seeping off of Asa as his hands ball into fists. "Hey guys," she says, sauntering toward us. "Anyone hungry? I have leftovers." She holds out the pizza box and keeps the smile plastered on her face. Dalton jumps up and meets her, grabbing the box out of her hands. "Hell yeah," he says, taking a slice.
He hands the box to me, so I grab one too. I hand the box to Asa just as Sloane takes a seat on the lawn chair with him. She leans in to kiss him, but he pulls back. "Where'd you get this?" he asks, closing the lid to read the top of it. She shrugs, careful not to look at me at all. "Some Italian place? One of my classes was canceled today and I was hungry, so I grabbed lunch." "Alone?" he asks, setting the box on the concrete next to him. She smiles. "Yeah, I'm so tired of campus food." She reaches down to the box and grabs a slice. "Taste it," she says, handing it to him. "It's really good. I brought it home so you could try it." Asa grabs the slice of pizza out of her hands and drops it back onto the box. He leans forward and takes Sloane by the hand, pulling her to him. "Come here," he says, pulling her onto his lap and grabbing the back of her head to kiss her. I look away. I have to. Asa stands up with Sloane still wrapped around him. I can see him out of the corner of my eye as he hoists her up by the ass, kissing her neck. He walks toward the house and I look up, just as she glances at me from over his shoulder. She watches me wide-eyed until he carries her through the back door and into the house, more than likely all the way up to his bed. I lean back in my chair and let out a huge-ass sigh, running my hands through my hair. How am I expected to just sit here, knowing what's going on in that house? "I wish we could bust his ass today," I say to Dalton. "I don't like the way she looks at you," Dalton says with a mouthful of pizza. I glance over at him and he's still staring at the back door. "She's trouble." I pick up the box of pizza and grab another slice. "Jealous?" I laugh, trying to appear nonchalant about his comment. "You can always have Jess. I hear John's a lot more generous than Asa." Dalton laughs and shakes his head. "These people are so fucked up." "Not all of them." "I think we could use her," Dalton adds. I look over at him and can see his wheels turning. "Use her how?" "She's into you," he says, sitting straight up in his seat. "You have to use that to your advantage. Get close to her. She probably knows more about the people Asa works with than we'll ever be able to find out from our positions." Shit. The last thing I want to do is get her involved. "I don't think that's a good idea." Dalton stands up and says, "Bullshit, this is perfect. That girl is the break we've been waiting for in this case." He starts dialing a number on his phone, walking toward the back door. Using women to get closer to cracking a case is nothing to him. He's done it in almost every job we've worked together. It's just not something I'm willing to do. But it may not be a choice that's left up to me.
13. Sloane. "Your heart is beating so fast," Asa says, dropping me onto the mattress. "Of course it is. This was probably the scariest 5 minutes of my life, not knowing if I could pull off the lie. Thanks to Carter, it worked." "You kissed me the entire way through the house," I say. "Of course it's beating fast." Asa slides on top of me and presses his lips to mine, kissing me gently. He runs his hand through my hair, kissing down my chin and neck until he gets to the base of my throat. He pauses and looks me straight in the eye. "Do you love me, Sloane?" he says, his question coming straight out of left field. I swallow and then nod. He pushes up onto the palms of his hands. "Well then, say it." I force a smile as I look up at him. "I love you, Asa." He stares at me a moment as if he has an internal lie detector and he's waiting to see if I passed. He slowly lowers himself on top of me and buries his head in my neck. "I love you too," he says. He rolls onto his side and pulls me to him. He holds me, rubbing his hand in soft circles over my back. I don't remember the last time he touched me in this bed without it being directly related to sex. He kisses the side of my head and sighs. "Don't leave me, Sloane," he says, firmly. "Don't you ever fucking leave me." The fierce yet desperate look in his eyes paralyzes me. I shake my head. "I won't, Asa." His eyes scroll over every inch of my face, lying here wrapped in his arms, watching him watch me with such intensity. I don't know if I should feel loved or terrified. It's a little of both. He presses his mouth to mine and kisses me hard. He shoves his tongue deep into my throat like he's trying to claim every inch of me from the inside out. There's nothing tender about it, and when he tears his mouth from mine, he's gasping for breath. He lifts up onto his knees and pulls his shirt over his head.
"Tell me again," he says, reaching to me and pulling both my shirt and bra over my head. "Tell me you love me, Sloane, that you'll never leave me."
"I love you. I'll never leave you," I whisper, praying the latter will soon be a lie. He brings his mouth back to mine and runs his hands down my stomach until he reaches my pants. He's kissing me with such intensity, it's hard to catch my breath. He tries to pull my pants down, but he can't seem to break away from my mouth long enough to do it. I lift my hips and remove my clothes, just like the whore I've become for him. Because is this not the definition of a whore? Someone who compromises his or her self-respect for personal gain? Even if my personal gain is something selfless and has nothing to do with me and everything to do with my brother, it doesn't change the fact that I'm having sex with him in exchange for something, which, by definition, makes me a whore. His whore. And from the possessive look in his eyes, that's all he'll ever allow me to be.
14. Carter. There are a few things worse than my sense of timing. As soon as I open the back door to walk inside the house, my ears are met with the final sound of Asa's grunts coming from upstairs. I pause in the kitchen, not even sure why I'm listening to what he's doing to her. Just the thought of it makes my stomach turn, especially knowing what he just did to Jess a matter of 2 hours ago. When I hear footsteps upstairs and the bathroom door shut, I snap out of my trance and walk to the refrigerator. There's a magnetic dry erase board covered in phone numbers stuck to the front of the fridge. I grab one of the markers and press it to the board and write. Footsteps descend the stairs and I snap the marker back into place, then turn around just in time to see Ace around the corner. "Hey," he says. He's barefoot and the only thing he's wearing is his unbuttoned blue jeans. His hair is in disarray and he has a smug grin on his face. "What's up?" I lean against the counter and watch him as he walks to the cabinet and grabs a bag of potato chips. He opens it and leans against the counter across from me. "How'd it go last night?" he asks. "I haven't even had a chance to ask you." "Good," I say. "But I was curious, what if we could get to his supplier directly? There really isn't a need for a middleman anymore, if the only reason you were going through him was for translation." Asa pops another chip into his mouth and licks his fingers. "Why do you think I brought you in?" He sets the bag of chips down and turns to the sink, running his hands under the water. "My hands fucking taste like pussy," he says, scrubbing them with soap. This is one of the few moments in my career when I wish I had chosen something a little lamer, something a little less emotionally draining. I should have been a poetry teacher. "How long have you been dating that girl?" I ask. Part of what I'm here for is to pry, but the only questions I seem to want to know the answers to are questions related to Sloane. He dries his hands on a towel and grabs the bag of chips, then takes a seat on a bar stool at the bar. I stay where I am. "A while. 2 years, maybe?" He shoves a handful of chips into his mouth and wipes his palm down the leg of his jeans. "Doesn't seem like she approves of what you do," I say, treading lightly. "You think she'd ever out you?" "Hell no," he quickly replies. "I'm all she has. She's got no choice but to accept it." I nod and grip at the edge of the counter behind me. I don't trust a word that comes out of his mouth, so I'm really hoping the fact that he's all she has is just another one of his lies. "Just making sure," I say. "It's hard for me to trust people, if you know what I mean." Asa narrows his eyes and leans forward. "Don't ever trust anyone, Carter, especially the whores." "I thought you said Sloane wasn't a whore," I challenge. He keeps his eyes locked with mine, unmoving and angry. For a moment, I'm worried he might do to me what he did to John earlier. Instead, he brings his hand to his jaw and pops his neck, then leans back in his seat again. The flash of anger in his eyes dissipates with the sound of Sloane's footsteps descending the stairs. She walks into the kitchen and comes to a pause when she sees both of us. Asa takes his eyes off me and looks at Sloane. He laughs and stands up, scooping her against him. "People have to earn my trust," he says, looking over her shoulder at me. "Sloane earned hers." She puts her hands on his chest and pushes against him, but he doesn't release her. He sits back down on the bar stool and pulls her to him so that she's between his legs with her back to his chest, facing me. He wraps his arms around her stomach and rests his chin on her shoulder, making eye contact with me again. I like you, Carter, Asa says. You're all business. I force a half smile, gripping the counter with all my strength as I try not to look in her eyes. I can't handle the fear I see in them every time he has his hands on her. Speaking of business, I say, I'll be back in a couple of hours. I've got a few things I need to do. I straighten up and walk past Sloane and Asa toward the front door. When I do, she looks up at me with appreciation in her eyes. Asa bends down and kisses her neck, then lifts a hand to her breast. She squeezes her eyes shut and grimaces, then turns away from me. I keep walking and head for the front door, feeling completely helpless. I have to remind myself that I'm here for one reason and one reason only, and she isn't it. I text Dalton before I pull out of the driveway and tell him I'm going to the station to do a few write-ups. Instead, I just start driving, not having a clue as to where I'm going. I turn on the radio and try to rid the murderous thoughts I'm having of Asa, but all my other thoughts are of Sloane, and every thought I have of Sloane leads back to murderous thoughts of Asa. Asa is ruining countless lives, and Sloane's is just one of them. I can either focus on what I'm here to do and help take down everyone involved in his entire operation, which will in turn save lives, or I can save one girl from her abusive boyfriend. Having to separate what I'm here to do and what I want to do makes this situation feel like General Patton's theory, how sometimes it's necessary to sacrifice the lives of the few for the good of the many. It feels like I'm sacrificing Sloane's life for the sake of all the others that Asa is ruining. And the thought of that kills me. I find myself second-guessing whether or not I'm cut out for this profession for at least the third time in the last week. After an hour of driving around, I decide to head back to Asa's. Dalton stays there most of the time, but he told Asa I live on campus during a conversation they had a couple of months ago. Therefore, I had to actually get an apartment on campus in case Asa ever decides to run a check on me. I'm at Asa's more often than not, though, because that's where I'll ultimately get most of the info. Well, from being around his crew and possibly Sloane. I know Dalton is right. I know I need to utilize Sloane for the advantage of the investigation, but that would mean she would have to remain in the situation she's in. I'd much rather sneak her some cash and force her to run as far away from Asa as she can get. When I close in on Asa's street, I notice Sloane sitting at a park bench two blocks from their house. She's seated alone with books laid out in front of her on a picnic table. I slow down the car and pull over to the side of the road. I scope out the area, ensuring she's alone. I sit in my car and watch her a while, contemplating what I should do. If I were smarter, I would keep driving and refocus my attention where it needs to be. If I were smarter, I wouldn't be shutting my car door, preparing myself to cross the street. If I were smarter.
15. Sloane. I've never seen Asa study a day in his life. I study every day, regardless of how crazy things get around me. Like right now, having to leave the house and walk to the park just for peace and quiet. How in the hell does he have a 3.5 average GPA? I wouldn't put it past him if he were paying off his professors.
Hey.
I grip my keys, complete with pepper spray, and slowly turn around. Carter is walking up behind me with his hands tucked inside the pockets of his jeans. His dark hair is unkempt and hangs down his forehead, swooping into his eyes. He pauses a few feet from me, waiting for me to give him permission to approach. He isn't smiling at me this time. At least he minds well. Hey, I say flatly. I drop my keys back on the table. Did Asa send you to summon me? He walks to the picnic table and swings his leg over the bench and straddles it. He's facing me with his hands still in his pockets. I stare down at my textbooks and refuse to look at him. The mild crush I developed on him in class turned into what could have been a very serious shitstorm after having lunch with him. I need to keep my distance, and looking at him makes me not want to keep my distance.
I was just driving by. Saw you sitting here. Thought I'd check on you.
I'm fine, I say, returning my attention to the homework in front of me. I feel like maybe I should thank him for the heads up today. If he hadn't called, there's no telling how that situation would have turned out. But then again, he could have just been warning me to save his own ass. But I know he wasn't. I could hear the concern in his voice before I hung up the phone. He was scared for me. He was scared for me, just like I was scared for him.
"Are you?" he asks, skeptically. "Are you really fine?"
I glance up at him. He can't just leave things alone, can he? I drop my pencil on the table and turn to face him. He's always pushing for more truth, always wanting to know what the hell I'm thinking. If this is what he wants, we might as well get it over with. I take a deep breath and prepare to answer all the questions he's ever asked, and even ones he hasn't gotten around to asking yet. "Yes, I'm fine. I'm not great. I'm not terrible. I'm just fine. I'm fine because I have a roof over my head and a boyfriend who loves me despite the fact that he makes bad choices. Do I wish he were a better person? Yes. If I had the means, would I leave him? Yes. Absolutely. Do I wish there wasn't so much constantly going on at my house that I could actually find a quiet place to do homework or, heaven forbid, get some sleep? Hell yes. Do I wish I could graduate sooner and get out of this mess? Yes. Am I embarrassed by the way Asa treats me? Yes. Do I wish you weren't a part of this? Yes. Do I wish you could be the guy I thought you were the first time I met you in class? Yes. Do I wish you could save me?" I let out a short, defeated sigh and look down at my hands. "So much, Carter," I whisper. "I wish you could save me from all this shit so much, but you can't. I'm not in this life for myself. If I were, I would have left a long time ago." How could he save me from this life? He's a part of this life. If I ran from Asa and into Carter's arms, it would be the exact same lifestyle, just a different pair of arms. And Carter has no idea that the only reason I'm still in this situation isn't even about me or what I used to feel for Asa. I shake my head at this entire unfortunate situation we're in and try to blink back tears. "I left him once," I say to Carter. "It was in the beginning when I found out how he was making his money. I didn't have anywhere to go, but I left him because I knew I deserved better." I pause, searching for the right words. When I look up at Carter, the first thing I notice is the genuine concern in his eyes. It's a strange feeling to trust someone you barely know more than the person you share your own bed with. "I had two younger brothers growing up. They were born when I was only two. Twins. My mother was an addict, so they were both born with complications. Drew died when he was 10. The other, Stephen, needs a lot of care. Care I can't provide on my own if I want to build a good life for us. When he turned 16, he was finally approved for a group facility where he'd be able to live and have 24-hour care, and I could go to college and make a better life for us. Things were great until a few weeks after I decided to break up with Asa. Stephen's funding was pulled by the state, and I had no place for us to live, no place to care for him. My only other option was paying the fee out of pocket, which is thousands of dollars a month. I couldn't afford it, but the last thing I wanted was for him to be forced to move back in with my mother. It's not safe for him there. She's an addict and isn't in a position to care for herself, let alone Stephen. When I realized the situation I had put us both in, I didn't know where else to turn. When Asa offered to pay for Stephen's care if I would give him another chance, I couldn't say no. I moved back in with him. Now I'm forced to pretend that he's enough for me. I pretend to turn a blind eye to the awful things he does, and in turn, he sends a check every month to pay for Stephen's expenses. And that's why I'm still there, Carter. Because I have no other choice. Carter stares at me, completely silent. For a moment, I almost regret being so open with him. I've never told anyone that. As much as Asa doesn't deserve me, I'm still ashamed that I'm only with him because he helps me. It's embarrassing to admit the truth to someone. Lunch with him today seems like it was a world away from right now. So much has happened between this morning and this moment. He looks different now, not the playful Carter he was in class this morning, not the apologetic Carter he was after our lunch today. Right now, he just looks, I don't know,
like a different person altogether. Almost as if he's been pretending to be someone he's not, and this is the first time he's looking at me with truth behind his eyes. He glances away for a second, and I see the slow roll of his throat as he swallows and then speaks.
"I respect what you're doing for your brother, Sloane," he says. "But what good are you going to be to him if you end up dead? That house isn't safe for you. Asa isn't safe for you."
I sigh and wipe away a rogue tear. "I do what I'm able to do. I can't afford to worry about the what ifs." His eyes follow the tear down my cheek, and then he lifts a hand to my face and wipes it away. Of all the tears I've cried to Asa, he's never once attempted to wipe them away.
"Come here," Carter says, taking hold of my hand.
He pulls me toward him as he scoots closer to me. I look down at his hand, holding on to mine, and I attempt to pull it back. He squeezes it and grabs my elbow with his other hand.
"Come here,"
he whispers, soothingly, pulling me closer. He wraps his arms around me and guides my head to his shoulder. He squeezes me tightly, cradling my head with one of his hands. He presses his warm cheek against the top of my head, and he holds me. That's all he does. He doesn't make excuses. He doesn't lie and tell me everything will be okay because we both know it won't. He doesn't make promises he won't be able to keep like Asa does. He just holds me out of nothing more than a simple desire to bring me comfort. And it's the first time I've ever felt this. I scoot closer and relax against him, listening to the sound of his heart beating rapidly inside his chest. I close my eyes and try to imagine a time in my crazy, fucked up life that I've ever felt cared about, but I come up empty. I've been living on this earth for 21 years, and this is the first time I feel like someone actually gives a shit. I clench his shirt in my fists and try again to scoot even closer to him, wanting to curl up inside of him and relish this feeling forever. He lifts his cheek and lightly presses his lips against the top of my head. We remain clasped together, holding on to each other as if the fate of the world depends on this embrace. The thin layer of his shirt is damp from the tears that are pouring.